Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, bodybuilder extraordinaire and Justin Cuthbert holding you down on a Friday.
Can I just say one more thing?
Can't wait to go crush some creatine.
Can I just say one more thing?
What?
If I took a photo with The Rock, and I'm taller than you, I just expected to be like nipple height. Nipple height with The Rock is what I anticipated. And you were at least tall enough with the help of heels, but also maybe the height that we didn't expect from Rock. Movie stars, generally short. Tom Cruise, what is he, like 5'4"? Not as tall as what I expected. You had your arm around him. Angles. I apologize.
Rick from Little Britain texted in. Next year's main event at WrestleMania, The Rock and Ailish, the A-listers versus Justin and Ernie Ladd, Cuthbert and Ernie.
Sorry, who's my... Oh, okay. That's a good tie-in. I don't know the wrestler, but Bert and Ernie
is... We're going to crush you.
Oh, we'd be the, what's it called when a wrestler's brought out just to be just absolutely destroyed?
A jobber.
Jobber. I am a jobber.
Blake Murphy's waking up like, how did you miss that?
You're a jobber for not knowing that.
Cam from Bethany just texted in. Hey, Beefy, you think you could bench Justin? This is a terrible...
See, you could ignore some things in the text line. I mean, I don't want to put that on you.
I think bench was probably my least strongest fitness testing.
One more callback then. You were bragging the other week about doing chin-ups with like a weight
hanging off
a belt.
I was in my form where I was the Team Canada logs of training that you had to hit certain standards, I was able to do chin-ups with a weighted belt.
Sounds like what The Rock would do for fun.
I could not do that now. My upper body strength is just falling off the cliff.
It's two athletes taking a photo together.
But my bench was never the strong suit of my... Who needs upper body strength? You're a hockey player. But no, I could not bench Justin. Thanks, Cam. Connor and Vaughn texted in. I'll be honest, the first thing I thought when I saw the pictures, how tall is Ailish? Okay.
There you go.
Was that you texting in?
Connor and Vaughn. My guy.
Yeah, they're going to look at your phone number because I think that's you. Last one here. I can lift 100 pounds over my head. Good for you.
We all can.
Okay, so we got to set up the wake and rake before we get Luke Fox in here too. Yesterday.
My guy, Framber Valdez. I got to come, like something needs to change on my end. It's been rough, but yesterday was like the perfect microcosm of my latest gambling streak here. Framber Valdez gets into the sixth inning. We need to get him through the sixth inning. He stumbles a little bit in this start. Houston Astros are losing at the time of the sixth inning, but he quick work of the first two outs. So he's one out away from hitting the over, over 17 and a half outs. Walk, double, walk. There wasn't even someone up in the bullpen when he was at 17 outs and he can't get through one of the next three batters. And we lose the bet. Now, we lost the bet anyway because Carson Wentz, despite his string of incompletions, didn't find an opposing player to throw the ball to. So we're still 0 for 2. But reminder to get your wake and rake submissions in because we are, of course, going to right the ship today. But for now, let's shift gears here. Chat with someone who may have been electrified last night by a certain somebody.
Yeah, that's me.
Ailish's height. That's Luke Fox, NHL writer for Sportsnet. Luke, the Rock experience. How'd that go?
I don't think it went as well for me as it went for Ailish.
We're best friends.
Yeah, your new bestie. No, that came out of nowhere. I mean, I think there were some people that were tipped off. Sheldon Keefe said that actually the plan was to have Mr. Johnson come in before the game.
Mr. Johnson.
Come in and pump up the team before the game, but I guess he said that fell through because he had another commitment or something. But Austin Matthews had a great line. He's like, you know, it's just a normal TV timeout. And he goes, I look up and The Rock comes flying out of nowhere. So it took a lot of people by surprise, myself included. At that point, he got the biggest ovation out of anyone. You know, they do the whole intros for all the players, and it was kind of muted. And then The Rock shows up, and the place explodes.
We're chatting with Luke Fox, who is our insider today, and our insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Now, The Rock did mess up the chant, Luke. And
oh, I know. He tried to get something new going, maybe. Mm-hmm.
That's a spin. No, I asked him.
My spin is that Ailish, who had like a little green room thing, because she was there, she was involved, she was chatting with The Rock beforehand, didn't, you know, properly inform him of what the proper chant is. So if you're looking for blame, the person sitting across from me is the reason why the PR machine
I was too mesmerized by how similar our bodies looked.
Okay, that'll be the topic of my next column, then.
There you go. On to more important things, Luke. What do you think the most important thing from last night was, from the context of a bit of a regrettable opener to Samsonov playing his former team, to that top four forward group looking really good, maybe just Justin Hall having a decent outing after a rough debut? What do you think stands out as the most important thing from last night?
Yeah, there's lots to choose from. And I wrote a lot about Samsonov's performance and him getting a big win against his former team. But to me, really, it's that the team was engaged and responded to Sheldon Keefe calling them out. I was talking with someone after a game, and, you know, that was a bit of a bold play by Sheldon Keefe after a really horrible loss, sloppy loss in Montreal against the team that people need to remember finished dead last season. And we're dressing, you know, four rookies on defense. Like, that's a team that the Toronto Maple Leafs should feast upon. So the fact that it was an even game and then they let it slip away at the end, in the final minute, no less, with their own doing, with some brutal giveaways, was just a horrible look. And quite frankly, I think Sheldon Keefe was embarrassed. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the team playing down to its competition, leaving a lot of points on the table last season against weaker teams, and to have a game not even go to overtime and swipe a point and lose in that fashion, I think was embarrassing for them to some degree. And it's one thing if he went in and ripped his guys behind the closed doors, but he could have came out to us and just brushed it off a little bit and said, hey, you know, we're just getting our legs under us. First game, you know, yeah, it's a bad loss, but we'll be back. But he went, you know, full in, called it unacceptable. You know, I can't stand for this. These guys shouldn't stand for this. He knows this market. He knows that we're going to run with that. He knows all of a sudden it's a bigger deal. What if last night they came out and played equally soft and lost to the Washington Capitals, who are pretty depleted right now? They don't look like the Washington Capitals of old. No Nick Backstrom, no Tom Wilson. Ovi wasn't so engaged last night either, to be honest. But what if they lose after he does that? Then the questions are like, has Sheldon Keefe lost this room? You know what I mean? Like, it could have turned pretty quick. So to me, to answer your question, Justin, I think the most important thing is they came out and dominated play. Yeah, they were down 2-1 after the first period, but that was a Toronto Maple Leafs game. They were more physical. They were shot blocking. Justin Hall is the poster boy for that last night. And just the power play looked dangerous even before it scored. It looked dangerous. It looked soft in Montreal. I did not like the look of their power play. So just the fact that they seemed to wake up to a man and be a more engaged team, I think that was the biggest thing.
Justin and I thought about that post, you know, season opener with Keefe's comments. To you, does that sound like there's just a little bit more pressure that he's feeling, that he's putting on this team? Because you only have a few of those bullets, as you mentioned. You can't just go in every game and rip your team in the media, especially in the market of Toronto. A little bit more emphasis on this season meaning more than just coasting into the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of that has to do with how things started last season. You know, they kind of tiptoed into last season and things were were kind of tense early. I mean, I think a lot of people forget about it because they eventually got their footing and went off and rolling, had an incredible November, and ended up finishing with the most standing points in franchise history. But the first couple of weeks were a little tense, a little rocky. They were losing to some weak teams. They got blown out in Pittsburgh, something awful. And it set a coming an odd tone. And I think, in my mind, I think Keith thought, okay, we lose in Montreal to a bad team in a bad way. Maybe we're going to do this again. So he said last night after the game, he's like, you don't really want to use one of those bullets. Coaches only get so many of those bullets where you come out and blast the team in the media after the game. I mean, the most memorable one last year was probably the soft and purposeless game. I mm-hmm. believe it was against the Rangers, where their young defense kind of got feasted upon. Yeah, you don't want to use it in game one and kick up a bit of a firestorm already. And it's like, what, we're in game two and it feels like an important win? Like, you can't lose two in a row? But that's kind of the storm he helped create heading into last night. So I think he didn't want this thing to slide. And he got their attention. He said they had meetings yesterday morning and had some what he called frank discussions. And hey, they responded, and that thing could have went either way. The way Samsonov didn't have a fantastic first period at all, but the fact that he keeps it at two, stops the rest of the pucks, the penalty killing was excellent. They're 9 for 9 now, by the way. It's kind of a story that's flown under the radar, and especially when you're facing a 6-on-4 with the game on the line in the dying minutes. It was the defense that bailed them out.
You're right. It was a gamble for sure. But I think, obviously the response was there. 21 first period shots tells you that the Leafs were ready to go and responding appropriately to the call out. But I think it might be, a sign of a confident coach. Like, you can look at it two ways. Is it like he feeling the pressure? Is he desperate in this moment? Does he need them to turn it around right now or things could go south? Or is it like, I know I have this room. I know I have their attention, and I can play this card right now and get the appropriate response. So I think you can look at it two ways, but I tend to gravitate towards the positive side that Sheldon Keefe is the respect level is there, and we saw the response. He did leave us on the edge of our seat a little bit with the news on who might start Saturday night versus the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
Do we have starter intrigue
no.
here? Or is that no?
To me,
why not say it then?
To me, that was just, he's like, I'll let you know Saturday morning, and maybe just being extra cautious, make sure everyone's healthy and ready to go. But I would be stunned if Matt Murray doesn't get that start against his mm-hmm. old team.
So
I think the first few starts are probably mapped out well in advance.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, you go back and forth now because you're trying to get these guys both to feel good, right? Like, I think that's maybe objective one here in the opening month of the season is figure out what you got, but hopefully have these guys feeling comfortable. I mean, Samsonov came to that game. It looked like the nerves, the pressure, the revenge game spot might have, contributed to what was a pretty regrettable first period. But objective A has to be getting both these guys out, both these guys right. And I guess going back to Samsonov would be a weird move at this stage.
Yeah, and also you've committed more money and more term and made it a greater priority to bring Matt Murray in. I mean, he's their guy. That doesn't mean he can't lose the job to Samsonov. And if you're comparing both guys' first starts, you're going to give the round one to Samsonov. But, the tie goes to the guy with the two cup rings. The tie goes to the guy that the goalie coaches have known since he was 10 years old. Like, that's their guy. Not the guy that they brought in, when they looked around and saw who was left to be a capable backup, and they brought in on a one-year, $1.8 million prove-it deal. Is there a world where Samsonov takes that spot? Absolutely. Through performance, if Matt Murray can't stay healthy, this team needs wins. So I think he's in danger of losing it. But I think you go with Matt Murray as your guy to start. Absolutely. Especially, Saturday night, first Saturday night of the season, playing his old team. Like, you kind of want him in that pressure situation. If he gets all weirded out or nervous because he's playing his old team and things went sideways there at the end, I mean, that's the kind of test you want. It's a long 82-game season. You're not going to get too many pressure games or kind of how does this test where you can see how a guy responds to a little something extra this early very often. And it is, to me, it's actually kind of fortunate that Samsonov gets to play his old team at the home opener. Like, that's a pretty mm-hmm. pressure situation. He admitted to a lot of nerves afterwards, and that second goal was quite frankly a stinker. And he said that it was a bit of a wake up call, and he forced himself to settle down, and he responded well. And I think, you know, Matt Murray coming off a bad loss where he gives up a goal, you know, it's probably mostly Jake Muzzin's fault, but he gives up a goal in the final minute that costs his team at least 1 point. You know, that was a rough first outing. So now he's under the gun. You know, it's going to be Hockey Night in Canada, his old team. How does he respond? I think it's kind of nice, actually, that they get to see what this guy's made of this early.
Mm-hmm. No, the pressure will be high. I guess that's the opportunity to prove the type of goaltender you are. Somebody that didn't really seem to have much pressure last night on home ice, or at least show it, was Austin Matthews. He seemed to be on his way to becoming the Austin Matthews that we expect, especially because I noticed he was extremely physical last night. And I know the state of the muscle on this team isn't up to last year's standard. How much of an impact does it make team-wise when Matthews is crushing on the ice, and also how much it elevates his game?
Yeah, 5 hits, and the Toronto Maple Leafs out-hit the Washington Capitals, which have a reputation of being a bruising team. And, you know, the default is, well, usually the team that hits more, it's because they don't have the puck. Well, the Leafs had the puck most of the time. So that set a tone. And, you know, I love Austin Matthews. I think he's at his best when he's physically engaged. And if you look at his hit totals, he's slowly become more and more physical as he's gotten more mature, more older, more comfortable with his body. He's a big guy. He's a big guy. And then when he decides to get engaged like that, I think it has a ripple effect on the team. You know, people didn't, yeah, well, partly because I don't think they know that he got his stick on the Mark Giordano shot and that he actually scored the game winner. But people got most excited in that building about Austin Matthews when he laid out that big hit in the third period. And an MVP mm-hmm. chant started in the upper bowl because of a hit, not because of any play he made with the puck. So that just goes to show you, like, how much it can, A, ignite his bench and have a ripple effect on his teammates, but also ignite the building. At that point, when it was tied 2-2, the building had gotten kind of nervously quiet. And it was a bit concerning, you know, the fact that home opener, rocks in the building, obviously. But this is a good team who had been controlling play, and, you know, they just hadn't had the lead. And, you know, a play like that, even though, you know, it had no direct effect on creating a scoring chance or anything, it kind of woke everyone up. So I'm sure he took note of that. And an engaged Austin Matthews is a more effective Austin Matthews.
Luke, I want to ask you about the state of the bottom six and more specifically, David Kampf's role. A little surprised that, you know, this isn't necessarily a demotion, but he's gone from the third line to the fourth line. And I guess you could spin it that way. But I was watching that game like, man, they're misusing this guy. I mean, he was such a quality checker, a guy who you could rely on for big minutes and tough minutes. And now he's centering two guys who have yet to really make an impact. But then I look at the stats, and his number one overlap was Alexander Ovechkin, who did nothing at even strength, who look, in your opinion, disengaged, in my opinion, too. And part of that's got to be some of David Kampf. Do they just have enough in the bottom six now where they can kind of spread it out? Or are they facing a situation where it's like, okay, where do we put Kerfoot? Where do we put Kampf? Is this all, are the pieces in place right now? And can they kind of use Kampf more sparingly, but still as effectively, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm not convinced that the pieces are in place, like the lineup for game one is going to be the lineup for game 83. You know, I think there will be some experimentation. I think over the course of the season, Sheldon Keefe likes to try different things. But I think the main takeaway that we should get from these first two games, and you could see him leaning towards this even through training camp, is that the line between line three and line, or the gap in ice time, in trust, whatever you want to say, between line three and line four has shrunk. It's almost more of a bottom six, or like a line 3A and 3B. And depending on the situation, depending on who the opposition's putting out, depending where the face-off is, Sheldon Keefe feels he can use a different line in a different situation. That fourth line is not, the David Camp line is not meant to score. And I'd be shocked if David Camp threatens his 10 goals that I think he had last season. That will probably remain a career high, because I think he's going to start every face-off way back near his own net. And if you don't notice him, it's probably a good night for that line, because he's not going to be throwing the body as much as Zach Aston-Reese and Abe Kubel. And it's really refreshing, actually, to see a fourth line with some speed and a willingness to really check hard and kind of make an impact that way. But his job is to win face-offs, shut down the opposition, get the puck down to the other end, get off. There were a couple instances where that line forced the Capitals into an icing. So the ref takes the puck all the way down to the other end, and then they get off, and Austin Matthews' line comes on, or Don Tavares' line comes on. And that's kind of their job. You get off, we'll put our offensive skill guys on in the offensive zone that you helped us gain, and then those guys can do the pretty work.
Luke, before I let you go, you know, your jukebox music guy, were you disappointed with the lack of change in the goal song?
So I don't want to say I'm disappointed, because it's like a trade, okay? So, well, what are you trading it for? I don't hate the Hall & Oates as much as some people. I know there's some people are livid. I think it is time to mix it up, but you got to pick the right song. I'm a big fan, and the Buffalo Sabres are doing this year.
Yes,
I believe they
me
did
too.
It last year. They're not the first team to do it. I know Vancouver experimented for a while. Tampa Bay has some guys that have their own song. I love the personalized goal song. I think it should be like a walk-up song in baseball. And it lets fans, gives them a little window into what their favorite player likes to listen to. And it mixes it up, keeps people on their toes. The Leafs are a pretty traditional franchise, but I'm all for the personalized goal song. Let's get that going.
Couldn't agree more. Justin, on the other side, he's boring and he wouldn't even know what to pick. He said, oh, Canada, probably. So, Luke, totally agree. Love that you're supporting my take here, and appreciate you joining us this morning.
Okay, give my best to Mr. Johnson, Alish, next time you see him.
Yeah, no, I'll text him, no problem.
Okay.
Luke Fox, NHL writer with us at Sportsnet, and our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
Let's do a quick something to chew on.
Yes.
Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Okay, so we've been on the Carson Wentz story a little bit here, poking fun. But the Washington Commanders did win last night.
Did they?
Barely.
Everybody else lost.
And Wentz,
all of America
and Canada. Wentz ran his record on Thursday Night Football to 7-0. He might be the greatest Thursday night quarterback of all time.
Okay.
Forget Cooper Rush, who's undefeated as a starter in his career. He doesn't have seven wins on Thursday night.
He doesn't.
But Carson Wentz's record on any other day, predominantly Sundays, 38-41-1. Actually, not that bad. It seems like it'd be worse. But I guess that's the thing with Carson Wentz. He's playing with, like, reasonably competent teams and can't lift them to even a 500 record. I guess he's over 500 if you count Thursdays, because that would make him 45-41-1 all time. But Carson Wentz, Thursday night, keep that in mind moving forward for future Wake and Rake submissions.
I just took a look. They have no more Thursday night games. Thank God.
Yeah, it's probably a good
Sunday
thing.
Sunday. Oh, I got a Monday in there. Sunday. Saturday. Oh, because that's Christmas Eve. And Sunday. So, unfortunately, you won't get to put that in your Wake and Rake.
We probably don't need more narrative bets at this point.
No, we need to switch it up.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We got, did we decide Davey, CD, all of the above? As long as it wasn't Chuck. He didn't like Chuck.
I feel like we decided it was better that we didn't.
Yeah. Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst. Charles, I met The Rock last night. I just wanted to tell you because I thought you'd like that.
What?
I know. Cool, right?
Did you call him Dwayne?
Yes.
Call him The Rock?
No.
We were specifically told
Dwayne Johnson is his name now. I got to take a photo with him. We'll email it to you. Apparently, Justin thinks that I look very similar in size to The Rock. I just needed to also mention that. So yeah, I've been bulking up.
I've stubbed my toe pretty dramatically this morning, Charles.
Way to go, Justin.
Anyway, I thought you would like that. I'm sure you've met some cool people in your life, but that's the biggest I've ever met.
I don't know that I can top that. I mean, at this hour of the morning, you come roaring out the gates with, you met Mr. Dwayne Johnson, and just casually just drop it in and then find out Justin tried to mess it up for the rest
of
us, you know, with a comment. But hey, you know, we all recover. We move on. That is really cool. That is
not as cool as
really
talking
cool.
to you every Friday, but I just, you know.
No, that is way cooler because right now I'm just going through my head the transformation of him, you know, from where he started. I mean, I think you can go back to what was that, the movie he did with Travolta where he was an aspiring actor. He had hair and he was singing and he was doing, he's doing like Elvis songs and the whole thing. It's a bit part. It was one of those get shorty, be cool. In that genre, when Travolta was making those movies, those Elmore Leonard movies, oh, very cool. But anyway, we can recount his career at another time.
Congratulations to him for
parlaying an average college football career into a sensational worldwide phenomenon.
That's, right.
That's pretty cool.
I thought you were going to give us a Calgary Stampeders callback because his football career, I think, started and died with the Canadian Football League. So, have you ever been starstruck? Charles Davis, are you a starstruck guy? I think Ailish handled it pretty well.
Yeah.
She's a big Rock fan.
Oh,
but,
I'm sure she did.
Have you ever been floored by a celebrity encounter?
Floored wouldn't be the right word. What I do is I try to pretend that I'm giving everyone their space and I don't rush to them and do things when, in fact, I am floored and just rooted to the spot. So I tell everyone later, I saw such and such, and I sat two seats, you know, from them on the airplane, or I was near this person or whatever. But I didn't rush up to them. I didn't bother them. You know, they're people, too, and they don't need us rushing them all the time. When every fiber of my body wanted me to go, hey, how you doing? Oh, this is so cool. Can I get a selfie? Can I do this? And somehow my body just, like, holds me there. But, yeah, starstruck, absolutely. I've been starstruck before. It happens all the time. But it probably has happened with a bunch of people that you guys just wouldn't know because I'm old. So coming up along the way, I would see people go, oh, my God, that is so cool. And if I threw the name, you'd be like, who is that? So, you know.
I feel like you're the type of guy that can handle that situation. You can both give them the space, but you can also handle the small talk with a celebrity encounter. Anyway, let's go to the football. Charles, you'll be on the call for Ravens and Giants this Sunday. We'll circle back to that in a second, but I think we got to start with the game of the year, at least so far, which is Bills at Chiefs. How do you think the loss to the Chiefs has affected the way maybe the Bills have approached this season, will approach this game? How do you think it's changed them this year?
I don't know that it's changed them as much as it's galvanized them, Justin. I think that for Buffalo, it's been a couple of seasons worth of we've kind of been there, but we haven't gotten through to where we want to. And it wasn't lack of confidence. It wasn't lack of talent. It wasn't lack of anything. There was some bad luck involved. There was, you know, I think we can all talk about the strategy down the stretch with the 13 seconds. You know, I mean, I still remember yelling at the TV, put the ball in play. I never liked kicking it out of the end zone in that spot because I want to eat up time. and you put it in play, not necessarily just kicking it to the kick returner, but punching it to one side or the other, making them make a play on the football. And then that way they have to make a decision to either go down and call a timeout, you know, and kill the clock, or run it, which eats up clock, and you shouldn't give up a big return there. And then, of course, the other part was just Travis Kelce being unimpeded every time he took a snap. I mean, I just like somebody's got to be over the top of him. Now, these coaches have forgotten more football than I know, but that was those were my opinions then, and they're my opinions now. I still think that overall, this Buffalo team was not shattered by the loss. And as I said, and a lot of people come back the next year, you know, they all wear the T-shirts, you know, unfinished business and redemption. And this, the Buffalo's never done that. They just went about their business, because that's why I use the word galvanized. You know, hey, we know how close we are. We know how good we are. Now we just have to go get the job done. And, yeah, this is a game we're all pointing to. The whole league's watching. This is the showdown. This is the big one. If this was college football, it'd be the game of the century. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, it'd be that one. But it's the NFL, and they understand win or lose. There's a lot of football left. There's a lot they have to take care of, and we'll probably see them again. Would they like to win? Absolutely. Remember, they didn't in regular season last year. But the one they want, that's going to come in January. So right now, they just want to go ahead and play, do their thing. And if it comes out with a win, so be it. A loss, they'll handle. But I think they'd like to put a little doubt in Kansas City's mind and let Kansas City know, hey, we are that team. Okay, you got us at the end of last year, but we are that team, and what everyone's seeing around the league, we want to show the rest of the league we're going to do it against Kansas City too.
And a different Kansas City team this time around, and obviously you mentioned 4 touchdowns for Travis Kelce last week, but do they have enough outside of him offensively to beat the Bills this time around? You know, Josh Allen's looking pretty dynamite, so does the rest of their team. So if you're looking at an advantage for the Bills, is this the time that they could capitalize?
Yeah, I think so. And what I've loved is watching the flexibility. And let's start with Bill's defense. Mm-hmm. What Leslie Frazier's doing coordinating that defense has been what I think fantastic. Because you remember the Baltimore game. Baltimore was doing a very nice job on offense in the first half, controlling the clock, scoring points, getting a nice lead. It was 20-3 at one point. And the Buffalo Bills came into the game the least blitzing team in the NFL by a big margin. Like, it wasn't even close. Like, we just don't do that. Well, as the game went on and they needed to create extra possessions, needed to shut down Baltimore, Leslie Frazier made a tactical decision, and he didn't go nuts with it. Like, all of a sudden, he didn't put 7 people on every play. But he started bringing selective pressure on key downs, found that it was working, and stayed with it. So it shows flexibility, adaptability during a game, which doesn't surprise me a bit with Leslie and his mind. And then they went ahead, and then Josh and the offense picked things up, starting to write that last drive right before the half. And the reason that Baltimore went for it late, okay, John Harbaugh talked the analytics, and all of that I think is true. All of that is all of that is in his thought process. I do believe his overriding thought process was, for the most part, we have not stopped Josh Allen, this Buffalo offense, since the last drive of the first half. I don't trust 3 points is going to be enough. If I get 3, he's going to get 6. I want to get in a position where if he comes down and scores, at least I have a shot to get to overtime and force Buffalo to decide if they want to go for 2 or not. That's what I think was his thought process overwhelmingly, because of the way Buffalo had played. You know, so when I go back to this Kansas City game, and you're talking about what Kansas City has to present against Buffalo outside. Well, that means Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a wide receiver that they picked up, has to actually catch the ball consistently mm-hmm. for Kansas City. That's something he has not done in his career, and he did it again the other night. Ball bounced off of his hands a couple times. So if he doesn't do it, Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, is coming along and playing better. Sky Moore, the rookie, is starting to come along. But Kelce is still the key threat. And I think in key third down, key passing situations, I'd be surprised if Leslie Frazier on defense doesn't creatively find a way to double him or bring the extra pressure to him or bring a starting corner inside on him as opposed to someone else and make that ball go somewhere else to beat them. So that's one of the big adjustments or big things I'm going to look for in this game and watch and see. Because Patrick Mahomes is enjoying being the focal point and bringing a new group of people along. And I don't think he'll ever say it. But I don't think he minds the quiet of Tyreek Hill not in the huddle yelling at him, throwing the ball every play. I don't think that bothers him that he's not hearing that on each and every play. Now, does he miss it with the big plays he creates? Absolutely. But great quarterbacks love developing younger and newer receivers, and that's the position Mahomes is in right now.
Seems both teams have a reasonable amount to prove. Buffalo trying to get one back, but also the Chiefs, you know, maintaining that they've still got it. I believe the Chiefs are getting 2.5 points right now at home. Another game of the year, Sunday night, in any other week, we got the Cowboys and Eagles. It's, you know, undefeated Cooper Rush versus undefeated Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia. So rubber meets the road here in some ways. But I think this game is won and lost with the protection of Jalen Hurts. You got a best-on-best scenario here with the Dallas pass rush and the Eagles offensive line in that matchup, Charles, and where I think the game will be won and lost. Who do you think has the edge?
Yeah, I like where you're going with that, Justin. And the second part off of that is, let's say the pass rush is effective and Jalen Hurts has to flush and go and move. Well, we know he can run with the football. We know that he's a very good runner that way. Where his game has improved that I've seen is that if you forced him left to his left last year, percentages were way down in throwing the football, and way more if he moved left, he was going to tuck it and run because he just didn't have confidence moving to his left throwing the ball. If you pushed him right, his throwing percentages were up, and he's more likely to keep his eyes downfield and throw the football as opposed to run it if you flushed him to his right. This year, I'm seeing much better movement. It's not as the percentages aren't nearly as high that, hey, if he moves left, he's going to run it. He has improved all of that aspect in his game. So when Dallas does flush him, the battle's not won. Okay, the battle's only won if you flush him and then you cover guys downfield. And when quarterbacks move out of the pocket, that's when things get a little chaotic downfield, and that's when open receivers emerge for quarterbacks. And Jalen Hurts has done a nice job of finding them. So that'll be fun to watch, that pass rush. But also the second part, can they cover if indeed he gets outside the pocket and they don't allow receivers to come open?
Charles, you've got Ravens-Giants on Sunday, so perfect to ask about how the Giants have kind of keyed in this unexpected run. I'm sure you've done a lot of film study in advance, so what's the reason?
Yeah. A-list, we're all trying to figure it out. And I'm not saying that to be facetious.
We'll have to tune in and listen.
Obnoxious. You know, we're all trying to figure it out. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the Giants roster person for person, it's not a roster that's going to scare anyone. Okay, you're just going to go, oh, well, let's see if they can win 5 this year. That's what you would have said in preseason. If I had said to you in preseason on defense, the Giants starting linebackers would be Kate Crowder and Austin Calitro. Would that keep you up at night as an offensive player, offensive coordinator? Probably not. If I were to tell you that their number one pick, Kayvon Thibodeaux, would miss the first 2 games, and Azeez Ojulari, their second-round pick last year, had 8 sacks, or 7 sacks as a rookie, was going to miss the first couple of games, and there goes your edge pass rush, would that keep you, would you, as an offensive coordinator, be like, oh, good. You know, if I were telling you that Fabian Moreau is going to end up being a starting corner for them, you see where I'm going. Personnel-wise, it doesn't match up. But put it all together, grit, determination, other guys stepping up and playing better in spots you don't expect. They finished the Green Bay game in London. Justin Lane was in one corner, who had been cut by the Steelers and been a third-round pick a bunch of years and never really flourished there. And the other corner on the field was Nick McLeod, an undrafted free agent out of Notre Dame who was in Cincinnati last year. They were on the field against Aaron Rodgers for the biggest drives of the game, and they got it done. What they do there is the same thing that Buffalo does, and it makes perfect sense with the DNA, Dave Bowl coming from Buffalo, et cetera, Joe Shane coming from Buffalo as the GM, the same type of thought process and philosophy. They train the practice squad guys, the down-the-line guys, as hard as they possibly can. To say that they train them as well as the starters would be a misnomer, and that's disingenuous. But they find other ways to get them work so that just in case, and they make sure they're totally prepped on their offense and their defense. It's not like they bring them in the day before and go, guess what? You're not to learn this playbook by tomorrow. No, they learn it all along. They are part of the full practice squad and the full practice mechanism so that when they do play, it's not totally foreign to them. Are they getting the same reps in practice? Of course not. No one does with starters, but they do give them extra opportunities, extra reps, extra seven on sevens, not you name it, to try and get them so that if they do play, it's not totally foreign. And boy, is that working well. Buffalo does the exact same thing. Guys are able to step up and step in because they've met the guys before. They've been in the huddle before. They've been in the meetings. They've gotten the same calls. They've gotten the same situation. So it does help take away the awe and the mystery when they step across the line and play. And these Giants players have stepped up and met the task. They really should not be 4-1, but there's also an argument to be said, well, why shouldn't they be 4-1 by the way they've gone out and handled key situations? So give them a lot of credit that way.
As you know, Charles, hockey people love nicknames. Hockey people also love mid-season fire sales. And the Carolina Panthers might have the potential for that, firing Matt Rhule. And now there's reports that Christian McCaffrey might be on the table. I mean, this is something we don't necessarily see in the NFL, where teams literally try to strip it down and look to the future in such a dramatic way. That is, as I mentioned, sort of a hockey thing. But is it possible here that Carolina just goes on a liquidation sale and a bunch of pretty impressive talents will find their way into different cities this year?
It's absolutely possible. We would need to sit down the owner of the team, David Tepper, and see where his temperature is on it. Because as the owner of the team, he had pledged that Matt Rhule was going to get a long time to get this thing right. Remember, he gave him a 7-year contract. 7-year contracts are like unheard of in this day and age. And yet his patience ran out in year 3. So I just don't think a 7-year, whatever he says, really fits it. I'm eager to find out if he wants to just take this thing all the way, strip it down, and start up again, or if he thinks that they're good enough with the right people in place, meaning head coach, et cetera, that they can just elevate from there. And we'll find out, to your point. We will find out very soon which way he's thinking, because Christian McCaffrey would be a prime target, the running back. I think DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, the wide receivers, would draw a lot of interest around the league for people who are looking to try and upgrade and add to teams that they think are playoff and Super Bowl contenders. That's just starting on the offensive side of the ball. So, yeah, you're right about that. I personally don't expect a fire sale. I personally don't expect to see that. I think that he's going to be in the market to try and find a coach that he thinks is going to get him over the top, and then they will figure it out from there. I don't think they want to get rid of everyone and then say, let's go find ourselves a coach who'll be willing to come in here and do this. Like, if you're trying to get Sean Payton, all right, just as an example, because everyone's going to mention Sean Payton.
Yep.
Justin, are you going to be able to recruit Sean Payton, having already gotten rid of the best players on offense?
Well, if you maybe if you have, you know, 4 first-round picks, that might be something Sean Payton be interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, but Sean Payton is also in a situation where he did that in New Orleans. I think Sean Payton's looking for a situation where I don't have to wait as long.
True.
He's not 35 years old anymore. It doesn't mean he's 90, but at the same time, he's like, look, I want to go somewhere where we can get this thing going pretty quickly. That would be my sense. And again, getting Sean would be a long shot. But I'm just saying, that type of a coach, if you're looking for that person who wants to come in, you might want to throw the assets in front of them and then let them decide whether those assets work for them or not. So that's why I don't expect the full fire sale, even though the attractiveness is there. Now, if someone goes crazy and says, I'll give you 3 first-round picks, you have to do it.
Yeah.
But as I told a very good friend of mine who's a zealous Carolina Panthers fan, there's not going to be any first-round picks for Christian McCaffrey. He's a running back, and they don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing first-round picks for quarterbacks. They're not doing it for running backs. So you can just let that one go. Okay, just let it go, because he had these visions of they'll come for McCaffrey, they'll give us first round. They said no one's giving you a first round pick, not one, not especially not 2. So it's just not happening. They'll come with other offers, but it won't be for that. Remember, Christian's been hurt the last 2 years. No one's in that.
Hey, maybe that's good news for the Buffalo Bills and their fans if McCaffrey price isn't as high and they're interested.
Price is not going to be high. Yeah, if you're thinking it, price is not going to be high. And in the offseason, I thought that Saquon Barkley had a good chance of being a Buffalo Bill. See, that's where I thought that was going to happen with the Giants. And it was to your point, Justin, hey, brand new, Barkley's value, maybe this is a time to move him, starting fresh, whatever. And Brian Daboll and Joe Shane were like, no, let us evaluate him first before we decide what we're going to do. And that's worked out pretty well for the Giants. But I thought that he was a prime player that Buffalo might have a chance to get, because I really thought adding to their running game and a guy who can catch out of the backfield but could also make some tougher runs was a prime thing to add in Buffalo. But it didn't work out, much to the Giants' benefit.
Last one for you, Charles. We've gone the preview route rather than the recap route with this interview because what we saw on Thursday Night Football was...
That is not worth talking about.
pretty rough. But I do have maybe a preview slant on this. I mean, we've heard Ron Rivera, you know, sort of the outburst, his criticisms of Carson Wentz. Is it just time to go to Sam Howell here to get Carson Wentz out of this situation and maybe give some optimism or hope for this Commanders team, which is... got two wins. It's probably, the outlook's not great, but I feel like they need to rid themselves of the situation that they're in.
Yeah, I don't think it's time yet, because I did see the full interview with Ron, and what I found fascinating was how he said quarterback and paused, almost like, I'm going to let you guys have the money shot and the money quote. And then he went and gave us the full context of what he was saying. But I thought that was very interesting, because Ron's a very smart man. So I felt like it was almost calculated that he wanted the money shot out there. And why, I'm not quite sure. But he did. And we all ran with it, of course, because it's too good not to. But the rest of the context was other people had stability at quarterback. We have not had that in Washington since we've been here. We think Carson can be that guy, blah, 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 blah. But, of course, that never hit, because that wasn't good enough, right? I don't think he's ready to go there, Sam Howell. I think he's ready to continue to try and get Wentz better, but also get some guys healthy on offense and play. Logan Thomas, the tight end, didn't play last night. Jahan Dotson, the first-round pick from wide receiver, didn't play last night. If they can get guys back healthy, he wants to see that full evaluation there. And somehow they were able to eke out a win last night. I actually woke up to find out that they won, because I'm not – I don't know if you guys actually watched
No chance.
I couldn't do it. The only reason to watch it was to listen to our great colleague Al Michaels with his comments, because Al, I'm telling you, if it's not going well, he's going to let you know. Yeah. And 2 weeks in a row, he and Herbie were like, it was almost like they had monopoly money on when a touchdown would be scored. Mm-hmm. And that stuff was entertaining, but not enough for me to keep watching the game. Unfortunately, I did fall asleep.
Charles, I don't have to impart any wisdom on you, but I did learn an important thing today. Angles can make any two people look like they fit in a photo together.
Okay.
So if you're ever in a situation where I'm in, where The Rock is hanging out with someone, just know that you know, the right camera work can make two people look like they belong in the same photo.
I like it. Right? You know, that sounds like veteran savvy to me. It sounds like you've been there before.
Hey, I'm open to learning.
You know, that sounds like good stuff. Well, I can't wait to see the photo. Please make sure I get a look at this thing, please.
And I will.
Congratulations again. That beats the heck out of all of my celebrity encounters where I just stood there rooted to the spot. You had, you know, repartee, small talk, moved in, the whole deal. I'm very proud of you, Ailish.
Oh,
well,
thanks.
Done.
That's how we feel every time we get to talk to you, Charles. Appreciate you joining us, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Look forward to it. You guys take care of yourselves. Have a great week.
You as well, Charles. Charles Davis, NFL and CBS color analyst, doing the call for Ravens Giants this Sunday. Might be part of our lines, our pick aside in the Wake and Rake. You still have a little bit of time to send in your Wake and Rake submissions at 590-590. Not a lot of Toronto intrigue, but there's NHL. There's some MLB tonight. There's two college football games, Danielle. And maybe I'll look for a wrestling bet because, you know, I might be in the ring soon with The Rock.
Oh, God.
Just let it go for today. You have to just deal with it, and then we'll leave it on Friday.
That's fair. I mean, I guess I deserve to wear it over the course of the show.
You do. Haley Salvian joining us after the break. Talk about a full NHL recap here and your Toronto Maple Leafs. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailer, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.